We hope you enjoy this recording of a live broadcast brought to you via the ETIM Network, the online, live, interactive division of Torah in Motion. For more learning opportunities, please visit www.torahinmotion.org.
Okay, often I ask myself if the Rav were around, what he would think of this machzer. And of course, in my mind, I'd go back and forth. Maybe he would like it, maybe he wouldn't like it. And more recently, I'm thinking that he would hate it. Now, the reason I think he would hate it is because when the Rav gave a shir, or when the Rav gave a drasha, or when the Rav gave a lecture, it was a beautiful, thought-out structure. It was an edifice. He asked kasha teres. The kasha was exceedingly well thought out, very compelling. The teres was even more compelling. The teres was so compelling that you wonder why you didn't think of it. And every drasha he gave was along those lines. The problem with the machzer is that it's disjointed. You have a comment on this statement. You have a comment on this prayer, and then a completely different direction of comment in the next prayer. The development of theme is missing in the Machzer. This is something that I wrote in the introduction. I believe in the Rav's opinion, and perhaps in my opinion as well, it's a serious limitation, but it's a limitation that I can't, it's just inherent to the nature of a commentary. It's inherent to the, to what I was trying to do. In fact, that's the reason that in the Machzer itself we have the introductory essays. You can get some feeling, at least, for how the Rav jumped from one piece of the Machzer to the other and developed theme. What I'm trying to do here is do essentially the same thing. I want to go through the mitzvah of shofar and how it's developed in the Machzer, and how certain themes, specific themes in regard to the shofar, are developed in that machzer, and by necessity what we'll need to do is jump around in the machzer. When you're davening in the machzer, it's very difficult to halt kup, if you will, to keep in mind when was the last time you saw this theme was, especially when you're trying to you're trying to have kavana on everything that you're saying in davening. So what I'd like to do here is give some kind of to talk about four themes in the Rosh Hashanah Machzer in relation to the shofar, four themes in relation to the shofar and how they're tracked in the Machzer. So what I would like to do at this moment is I'm going to share the desktop. I'm going to show my desktop again. I'm going to hit start, and I'm going to open the PowerPoint. Okay, now once again, for me, what I'm seeing is it completely fills my screen in the computer. I am unable to see anybody else, and I'm unable to see comments. So I can probably hear the comments, but I can't see the comments. Shalom, are you still there? Hello?
Yeah, it's fine. Go ahead. Okay, this PowerPoint looks great.
Great. Okay, let me go back. I didn't start in the beginning. This is the topic that I'd like to discuss. Okay, let's talk for a minute about Tamei HaMitzvos and the philosophy of Halacha, just for a moment, according to the school of Brisk. According to the Brisker methodology, Halacha is normative, objective, ahistorical, apsychological, a completely independent method of thought. And this idea is mentioned or characterized in the maxim Mistakel bo raisa uvara oma. He looked in the Torah and created the world. The Torah predated the world, and as a result, nothing in the world, nothing affects halacha per se. There's nothing, therefore, more inscrutable than the reasons for individual mitzvos. The question, why, is fundamentally invalid as it's applied to mitzvos. because when you ask why, you suggest what motivated him. I eat because I'm hungry. I like to give tzedakah because I enjoy doing chesed. God does chesed not because he enjoys chesed, because that suggests that he has some type of need to do chesed. We can't apply motivation to God, and therefore we can't understand tamei mitzvos. That's really a basic idea within the Brisker canon. However, are actually reflecting this. If we look at halachic man, the Rav's magnum opus, he has this famous statement. Once my father was standing on the synagogue, sorry for the repeat of the phrase, once my father was standing on the synagogue platform on Rosh Hashanah, preparing to guide the order of the sounding of the shofar. The shofar sounder began to weep. My father turned to him and said, "Do you weep when you take the lulav? Why then do you weep when you sound the shofar? Are not both commandments of God?" A rather harsh statement from the Rav's father, Rav Moshe. In fact, I heard a lecture from Avraham Lichtenstein about 13 years ago, and he said that this statement and similar statements on halachic man suggest that halachic man is not really a role model, should not be a role model for Jews in general. They're really only for the Yechidei Skula. Having said that, however, if you look in Mipnimei HaRav by Rav Herschel Schachter a few years ago, he makes the following statements. He says it is appropriate to note that the Rav said in Shir, this is in 1984, towards the end of the time that he gave Shiurim at YU, that he did not agree with his father's approach. The Rav's understanding of the words of the Rambam is that within the mitzvah of shofar, there should be a kiyum shevalev, an inner fulfillment. You have to be thinking about something during the blowing of the shofar. And only through thinking about that thing or those things will you have this inner fulfillment. So what I would like to do in the remainder of this hour is discuss what it is that we're supposed to be thinking about. What is this inner fulfillment when it comes to the shofar? So these are the four topics I'd like to discuss. Topic number one, shofar somehow transfers God from the throne of strict judgment to the throne of mercy. Number two, shofar is the instrument of divine revelation. Number three, shofar is a medium of prayer. And four, shofar prompts the awakening, quote, awakening of teshuvah. And we will discuss all these in some detail. Oh, what happened here? There we go. Okay. The first topic I'm going to be discussing is by far the most difficult to grasp. It's based on a Ramban in Vayikra, chapter 23. The words of the Pasuk are familiar to us. Vachodesh hashvi, vachod lachodesh, on the seventh month, on the first day of the month. Yelochem shavoson, it shall be for you a day of resting. Zichron shua mikra kodesh. A day of Zichron Trua. The Ramban has a long comment on these words Zichron Trua, and the last part of the comment is what the Rav is basing his ideas on here, and in fact you'll see this idea reflected many places in the Machzor. Now, again, much of what we encounter in the Rosh Hashanah Machzor is explained by this Ramban. The problem is that you can read it yourself. Reading it superficially, the words are, I hate to say them, but they're almost incoherent. You can tell they're incoherent when the Ramban starts with the words Al-Pi Derech Ha'emes, which means essentially Kabbalistically. When the Ramban starts off a piece by saying Al-Pi Derech Ha'emes, you know it's time to get nervous. And this is no exception. Again, you can read through this. Each word is easy to translate, but the sentences just don't hold together. I've gone through it many times trying to figure it out, and it makes no sense to me. But the Rav, in fact, went through it word by word in a shir of his. After he goes through it, not only does it make eminent sense, but you can begin to understand a lot of what's going on in the Machzor in light of this. All right, let us, on the right is a familiar picture, the picture of the 13 spheros. I'm sure you've seen this picture before. I know nothing about Kabbalah. I'm not going to pretend that I can begin to explain what spheros are. What I want to emphasize, however, is that, or what I do know, or the very little that I do know, is that somehow this picture or this diagram represents emanations of God. The upper part of the diagram are the parts that are most inaccessible, the most difficult for man, the most distant from our realm, the most difficult to understand. Keser is the best example of that. If you look at the bottom, though, you have Malchus. Malchus is the sphera that represents how God is manifest on earth, God's sovereignty. And the first thing to understand when we're discussing this Ramban and discussing these certain parts of the Maaser is that the word Trua, aside from the sound of the shofar, which we normally associated with, it represents God's sovereignty. God's sovereignty on earth is represented by the word Trua. Now, how is God's sovereignty manifest on earth? Now, one way his sovereignty is manifest is through nature, through the laws of physics, through the laws of biology. His law is implanted in all living things in the mathematical equation. Now, this manifestation of his sovereignty is known as din. That's what it is. Now, part of this manifestation is reward, although it includes all the natural law, the laws of physics, the laws of biology, as I mentioned, it also includes an immediate punishment for sin. You can see this, for example, in Parshas Kedoshim repeatedly when it says that the land will spit out the Jewish people if they sin within the land of Israel. The land spitting out is a natural, almost biological reaction to something that cannot be digested. Sin, punishment for sin, is not something that comes, is not an independent activity that comes from God. The punishment of sin is part of nature, the same way a rock falls. You drop a rock, it falls, you do a sin, you get zapped. That is din. Again, this type of sovereignty is strict, rigid, coerced, it's irreversible. It's represented by the term truas milchama. We're going to be discussing the semantics of the word trua. The word trua in this context has the context of war or shattering, something that is that a person just can't tolerate, a normal person can't live under. Not only that, but the angels can't live under it, as we say in the Nesana Toka. So again, the word trua is derived from the word hisra'ah, which is a word that you see in Yeshaya, which means shattering or destruction. It does not recognize the possibility of teshuvah, since in the physical world, it is impossible to undo past events. I'll talk about an analogy that many people have mentioned. If someone, God forbid, has murdered somebody, he goes to an earthly court, he tells the judge, I feel terrible about having murdered this person. I have harata. I will never do it again. I resolve never to do it again. The judge says, Yashir Koach, thank you very much. You get a lethal injection. That is the irrationality of tshuva. You cannot reverse events in the laws of physics. Similarly, you cannot reverse the effects of sin. Sin results in punishment. It's a natural outcome. Again, and as we say in the Masonic Kokef, even the angels are condemned via this medium of revelation. However, there is a second way his sovereignty is expressed, and it's through Israel. Unlike the cosmic law, the laws of physics, which is foisted upon man, man has to abide by the law of physics whether he likes them or not. The law of gravity is the law of gravity. He cannot jump off a building. I mean, he cannot step off a building and not expect to die. I mean, not expect to fall down. However, unlike the cosmic law, which is foisted upon man, the moral law is voluntarily accepted. And when the Jew lives in compliance with his Torah, is close to God, dedicated to God, this God is revealed, his Malchus is revealed, not through the laws of physics or the laws of biology, but through his people. But voluntarily keeping his mitzvos, God's Malchus, that's a second way, God's Malchus is manifest. Now, in this context, the word trua does not mean shattering or truas milchama, which has the connotation of war. It means friendship. And we see this in a few contexts in the Chumash. Elokim haroe osi me'odi, which is a statement that Yaakov made, which means that God who has shepherded, it literally means shepherded, but Rashi means roe, means rea, which means friend. God has befriended me. Similarly, utruas melach bo, in the blessing that Bilam gave B'nai Yisrael. This is the friendship of the king is with him. The friendship of the king is with B'nai Yisrael. So here the word trua does not mean shattering a war, it means friendship. So according to the Ramban, if you look at the top, in Cain, yom trua yelochem, what does that mean? Shiviya hayom li trua lanu. It means that we make the trua ours. We identify with the trua. We should identify with the trua of friendship through manifesting his sovereignty via the moral law rather than through the laws of physics. And here we're going to be starting going through certain parts of the Maaser. I don't know how clear it is on your screen. It's quite clear on my screen. But I have on top the page numbers in the Maaser. You can actually open the Maaser itself. This is in the Rosh Hashanah Maaser on page 502 to 503. I'll be going through this, and hopefully you can follow through with your Maaserim if you have them. If not, hopefully you can see it on the screen. Here, Kel Emunah Be'Erech HaDin, Im Tematza Omek HaDin, Mi Yitzdak L'Fanecha Badin Kadosh. O faithful God, as you arrange judgment, if you ring out judgment to its essence, ringing out judgment to its essence means that you judge the Jewish people, you judge the earth, you judge everybody, the way the laws of physics work, no one can survive in judgment. Page 292 to 293. Here is exactly, almost, it's almost as if the Ramban wrote these words. Na'le badin alos bisrua. God is ascended in judgment to be exalted through the, I don't like this necessarily, the, well, it could be a good translation, but I'd like to keep the word trua in Hebrew. Trua. Gei in dorea l'roa'a. Causing the valley and its inhabitants to be shattered. The valley and its inhabitants being shattered, of course, meaning the malchus of physics. The first type of malchus. The first type of sovereignty. The irreversible type of sovereignty. Bashofar, however, bashofar, through the shofar, I will appease him. Okay? Bashofar apatenu uvavera kriya, and with bended knee, signifying his, man's voluntary acceptance of the mitzvos. Through the shield of the patriarchs, through the shield of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, in his temple garden, I will be befriended. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Through his temple garden, I will be befriended. So again, you can see this change in semantics from Leroa'a, which means shattered, down to Esroa'a, to be befriended. Again, it's as if the Ramban himself wrote these words in the Maaser. Page 494, 495, you see another manifestation of this idea. Again, shofar. Through the shofar, what's happening is that we change the semantics of trua, and we therefore change the malchus. We change the way God is manifest on earth. It's from the first type of malchus to the second type of malchus, from the malchus of the physical law to the malchus of the moral law that we voluntarily accept. This is a very involved piyut, which takes place immediately after the first day of Rosh Hashanah. The Rav gave an entire shiur on this piyut, and this is another limitation of the Maaser. There is no way to be able to read this commentary in the middle of davening. I don't know many Chazanim that actually sing this part. If the Chazanim did in fact sing this part, perhaps there would be time to read some of it. But I think in general Chazanim wait for their Chazanis to go, wait for their Chazanis in the Nesanet Tokef. Here, there is no time, there really is no time to read this. You've got to read this before Yontif. Upad me'oz l'shefat hayom. God is already adorned in his judicial robes for the days of judgment. Gishas yikumim p'nei ayom, with the approach of all existence before the dreaded one. Again, God is dreaded because he judges us with din, using the first type of sovereignty. Dinam, however, dinam bo lefales lepidyom, to weigh their judgment on it, and that judgment turns into redemption. That judgment turns into redemption. Now, I'm not going to go through the entire piyut here, but what's going on, what happens later, is that Adam HaRishon sins, God condemns him, but then God gives him amnesty. Why does God give Adam amnesty when in fact he promised that he was going to, that the day he ate, it says that the day he would eat from the Eitz Hadas, he would be killed. Why wasn't he killed immediately? Because what happened was God, this is a basic concept in Zichronos. God looks not only at the past, but looks into the future. So fat umabit of sof kol adoros, God conflates time. Past, present, and future are all in front of him. God saw that in the future there would be an Avram Avinu and a Yitzchak Avinu, and there was going to be an Akeda. And it was because of that future Akeda that gave Adam the right to continue living. It was the potential within Adam to create such tzaddikim that allowed him to continue living. And that is one of our messages. One of the messages that come across in Zichronos. Again, I won't go into detail about that, but you can look into the commentary in Zichronos and you can see this conflation of past, present, and future, and how God judges not only us from the standpoint of the past, of what we've done, and not only from the standpoint of what our forefathers did, but also from the standpoint of what our forebears will become, or may become, or what they have a potential of becoming. This is a piece out of the Yom Kippur Machzor. This is what the Rav explained was the Malchus, the second type of Malchus. He uses the word, the term is Malchus Ho, Bichal Adosi. His sovereignty is revealed not through the laws of physics, but through his assembled congregation. And this is a theme that comes up again. Let's continue with the Ramban. V'hinehu Yom Din V'amrich Barachamim V'lo Truas Milchama. This is important. It's a din barachamim. It's a day that starts with din and ends with rachamim. It transforms to rachamim. As a result, the Beit Halevi, the Rav's great-grandfather, he fasted on Rosh Hashanah out of this fear of din. I believe, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, in fact, there is such a minhag. You know, I was a little surprised to see that there was a minhag that you can, in fact, fast on Rosh Hashanah, which is a yontif, and that you presumably have an obligation to eat. But there is, in fact, a minhag to eat. There is a consistent minhag to fast with Rosh Hashanah. Some people, in fact, did it. And, in fact, the Beit HaLevi did it. The reason the Beit HaLevi did it, according to the Rav, is not so much because he wanted to follow the minhag per se. It's because he just couldn't eat. He just was beside himself. He knew what din was in all of its terrible implications. He knew that the day was a day of Yom HaDin, and he didn't want to face it, he was depressed the entire day of Rosh Hashanah, according to the Rav. It's the blowing of the shofar that makes this transformation, however, from din to rachamim, and as a result, many have the custom of skipping piyutim and shacharis to reach the shofar blowing earlier. And here is a statement in the piyut which suggests that liguv tro some she'emim romim ki say din lahamir b'shem b'sharachamim. Again, from the heights, turn to the sincerity of the shofar blast and exchange the throne of judgment for the throne of mercy. And again, on the bottom, you can see the commentary on judgment and mercy, din b'rachamim. I just circled another part. Rokshim lahariyal linso pidyom. They rush to blow the shofar to find redemption. This again reflects the fact that we want to get to shofar as quickly as we can. It's ideal to get to shofar as quickly as we can in order to subvert, if you will, or to sublimate the din so that the rachamim can come forth, which is a major theme of shofar. This is a fact reflected in Levam Nafati Ne Torah Mizmar. Allah Elokim Bisrua Hashem Bekol Shofar. God, Elokim, Elokim is Midas Hadin, right? Elokim is Midas Hadin. It says in the Tehillim, Elokim Nitzav Badas Kel Bekerev Elohim Yishpot. God stands among the company of judges. Among Elohim, in the second Elohim, is judges, not God. So the word Elohim, just the word, the name Elohim, and the word Elohim have the same etymological root. As a result, the name Elohim is Midas Hadin, because an earthly judge can only judge through Midas Hadin. He cannot judge a person on the basis, he can only judge on the basis of actions that you've done. He will not judge you favorably as a result of your tshuva. So Allah Elohim Bisrua, Hashem rises, Hashem has ascended, or Elohim, I should say, the Elohim rises with tshuva. The Midas Hadin rises through the tshuva, but Hashem, the Kol Shofar. Hashem, the Yudkei Vavkei, which is Midas Hadin. Why is it Midas Hadin? Because it's Hayah Hovev Yeh. God has the ability to conflate time, and as a result, one can, in fact, do tshuva, undoing and perhaps even undoing the past, or perhaps even making the sins of the past into mitzvos. That is why Yudkei Vavkei is, in fact, the Midas Harachamim. Allah Elokim B'Truah Hashem B'Kol Shofar. The Trua represents the Midas Hadin in this context, whereas the Kol Shofar means that it refers to the Trua. The Yudkei Vavkei, the Midas Harachamim, arises as a result of the sound of the shofar. So, and this leads right into what the Ramban says next. Rosh Hashanah is known as a Yom Trua and not a Yom Tekiah. Why is that the case? After all, if you count the number of Tekiahs and the number of Shran Truos, you have two-thirds more Tekiahs than you have Truos. Why is it called a Yom Trua and not a Yom Tekiah? The reason, according to the Ramban, is because the Tekiah is the Zichron in Zichron Trua. So when you say it's a Zichron Trua, it means Tekiah Trua. Zichron in this context means love, as we say in the words, and we actually say this in Zichronos. Chimide Dabrivo Zachar Eskarenu Od, referring to Ephraim. The more I speak of him, Zachar Eskarenu Od doesn't mean that I will remember him. It's absurd to think about somebody, of speaking of somebody, only after speaking about somebody do you remember him. It means I will love him. I love him more and more. The more I speak about him, the more I love him. Aben Yachir Li Ephraim, Ki Midei Davivo, Zachar Eskarenu Od. The word Zichron here means love. The Trua is bounded by two kikios, and the reason, Kabbalistically, is because Gevura, the Trua, which represents Gevura or Din, is bounded or imprisoned by Chesed and Tiferes. Chesed is represented by Avraham Avinu, and Tiferes is represented by Yaakov Avinu. So again, Yitzchak at the Akeda is symbolic of Din, the Midas HaGevura. On Rosh Hashanah, Din, or Gevura, is imprisoned by Avram through his Midas HaChesed, and Yaakov through his Midas HaTiferes. It's a little off the subject, but that is in fact the same reason we hold Arovos on Hoshana Rabba, Kabbalistically. The Arovos come from the word Arve Nachal, which comes from the word Ha'arev, which means to sweeten. Perhaps this is too much of a digression, but again, the point is that the Arvei Nochal, these Arvei Nochal that you're holding represent the Midas Harachamim. So again, now we know why we have a Tekiah, Trua, Tekiah. The Trua is bounded by the two Tekiahs. Trua representing Yitzchak, the first Tekiah representing Avraham Avinu, the third Tekiah representing Yaakov. And this, in fact, explains the three psukim that we say at the end of the Tekiahs. Ashrei ha'am yodei serua. Happy is the nation that knows the Trua. Here the word yodei doesn't mean know per se. It means you be united with, the way Adam, vayoda Adam es chava. we are united with the Truah. In other words, identifying with the Truah, identifying with God's sovereignty. B'shimcha yegilu kol hayom u'b'tzidkascha yarumu. The word tzedakah here is synonymous with the word chesed, which represents Avraham Avinu. Ki tiferes uzamo ata. The word tiferes, of course, being representative of Yaakov Avinu. That is the first section. I will now minimize this if I can. Are there any questions? Has anyone heard me? Hello?
Shalom, are you here?
I can hear. Can anyone, is there anyone who has any questions? If not, I'll just continue.
I think know the questions are just now on the bottom right, at least on my computer. It's a little smaller
right,
than
now
usual.
I can
next
see
to the send button should be on the bottom right.
Okay, I can see questions if there are any questions. If not, I'll just continue. It's taken from what I just read you was from Volume 6 of Neros Harav. Mostly from Volume 6, but there are other sources as well. You can actually go through the parts of the Master. Everything is in the commentary of the Master, by the way. You can go through the commentary of the Master. You can see the references at the end of the pieces that I brought down. Anything else? Okay, then let's continue. Okay, Shofar as divine revelation. This is based on a Gemara. A lot of this is based on the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. It's a Shakla V'Tari, it's a famous Shakla V'Tari in the Gemara, which I try to summarize here. According to the Gemara, according to the Mishnah, one shouldn't use a shofar taken from the horn of a cow. Why? Because the cow is reminiscent of the golden calf. And something that's used by the prosecution cannot at the same time be used for one's defense. Ein kategor na'ase sanegor, a basic idea. For the same reason, what the Kohen Gadol wore when he entered the Kodesh Kodeshim, the Holy of Holies, should not be made of gold, although the Kohen Gadol does indeed wear gold clothes while performing those parts of the temple service outside the Holy of Holies. However, there's a question. The blowing of the shofar also takes place outside of the Holy of Holies, so why can't it be taken from a cow? If we said that Ein Kategor Na'aseh Sanegor only applies within the Kodesh Kodeshim, we don't blow the shofar inside the Kodesh Kodeshim, in the Holy of Holies, why then can it not be taken from a cow, the cow which is reminiscent of the golden calf? And according to the Gemara, suppose when one blows the shofar, it is this he is in the Holy of Holies. When one blows the shofar, one is in the presence of God. That is the basic message of the Gemara. This is an important point. I just highlighted the comment here in the Maaser, pages 5. It's actually pages 550 to 554. This is a basic theme. In fact, the basic theme in Shofaros. If you look in Shofaros in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, what you will see is the structure of Ba'afil's Akronos and Sofros are three verses from the Chumash, three psukim from Ksuvim, and three psukim from Nevi'im. The first three psukim from Chumash, in the case of Sofros, deal with a revelation, a God's revelation of the past, specifically the giving of the Torah and the events that took place on Har Sinai. The ones from the Nevi'im in the future deal with the eschatological era, messianic times, and the central role that the shofar will take place in the heralding of Mashiach. But the second, the one in the middle, is what's most interesting. We have three psukim. I didn't highlight it, but you can probably follow it along with me. Hashem b'kol shofar. One pasuk from Tehillim. The Nemar b'chatzotros b'kol shofar hariyu l'fnei amelech Hashem. Pasuk verse number 2. The Nemar tiku b'chol shofar b'kesel liyom chagenu tichok tishal hush mishpat le'lokei Yaakov. Fine. We finished the three psukim. All of a sudden, The Anshei Knesset Hagdolah, who presumably instituted the davening, said, added this new part, this new verse of series of Sukkim. Haluka, 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 he's waxing eloquent. I can't stop. Haluka, Grosav, Haluka, Grosav, Haluka, Grosav, Haluka, Grosav, Haluka, Grosav, he's adding a whole bunch of Sukkim. He's violating his own rule of 3, 3, 3, and 3. Actually, there's one at the end, too. But the point is, he's violated the rule here. This seems to be completely extraneous. What is he adding over here? According to the Rav, and again, you can see this in the commentary on the bottom, when you are in the presence of God, that is the definition of pure joy. And when you are in rapture, when you are in joy, you simply cannot stop singing. You quote the three psukim from Tehillim, and you push it, can't stop. You just keep going. That's what the Rav is saying. Through the medium of shofar that we blow today, we are in God's throne room. We are in God's very presence. And being in God's very presence is the very definition of joy. As a result, you sing spontaneously. You can't stop with the three psukim. You just got to keep on going. That is the second theme. Let's go. I haven't heard any beeps, so we'll continue. Now let's go to the third theme. Shofar as prayer. This is another famous Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Rav Levi says that the shofar must be bent. Why? Because the more one bends oneself during prayer as he is facing the ground, the better. If shofar had nothing to do with prayer, if shofar was simply like Rav Moshe Soloveitchik suggested to his poor Baal Tokeya, was just another mitzvah in the Torah like matzah, there's no relationship between matzah and prayer. There's no relationship between lulav and prayer. There clearly is a motif of prayer in shofar, or else, if it's not, why would the shofar have to be bent? The best proof for this is in the very bracha at the end of shofaros. Baruch Ata Hashem, Shomea, Kol, Tuas, Amob, Yisrael, Barachamim. Blessed are you who hears the sound of the Trua of his nation, Israel, with mercy. We have no such bracha with regard to matzah. We don't ask Hashem, please God, see us eating the matzah or listen to the crunch of our matzah as we chew the matzah. We don't say, please see God, please look down favorably upon our shaking or upon our taking of the lulav. However, when it comes to shofar, we assert that God listens to our shofar. Why should he listen to our shofar? The reason is because the shofar is a medium of prayer. This comment that I have on the bottom on page 6024 to 625 indicates that the shofar is really a means of prayer that we use when we cannot fully articulate what we want to say. It's a reflection of the neshama pnimis, the inner soul. Words attenuate the message that we want to give. Our vocabulary is exceedingly limited. Our ability to pray verbally is exceedingly limited. When you want to break through the limitations that verbal prayer holds, you take the shofar and you just give this inarticulate, this heartfelt, you make this heartfelt, clear sound. And the Rav, in fact, said that this is in the Yom Kippur Machzor. The Rav, in fact, said this at the end of Ne'ilah. At the end of Ne'ilah, the Rav said, very often he felt that after having spent the entire day in prayer, and in fact, Yom Kippur is nothing more than a day of prayer, you're spending 15, 12, 15, 18 hours in the Beit HaKnesses, in the shul. All you're doing is praying, and the Rav felt that after those many, many hours of prayer, and this is the Rav talking, who is perhaps one of the most articulate people I've ever met, said that I've not begun to express to God what I really want to say. He used the analogy, as you'll see in the commentary here, of a son whose father has been gone for a long period of time, God comes back to visit us, comes back to us, comes close to us during the Yom Niroyim. He is closest to us at on Yom Kippur, and before the Father is about to depart, before the Father rises back, God rises back into the heaven in transcendence. Before that, we have to urgently express what we have been unable to express in an entire day of prayer, and as a result, one blows the shofar. This is the Rav's really beautiful explanation for Ne'ilah. I will now, let me pause here again, and I heard one question. Let's see what it is. Okay. Let me think about this. Shomea kol shuas amo Yisrael barachamim. That's an interesting, you're saying an interesting point. So in other words, what the Rav is saying is that shofar is the medium of divine revelation, but yet the chasima really deals with shofar as a method of prayer. It's a good question. You're asking a good question. I have to think about it. Again, there are levels of meaning. Kol Truas Amo Yisrael could mean could have any number of levels of meaning. And the word Trua has that implication of Malchus. But again, it's a good question. It's something I need to think about. It's a very, very good point. Any other questions? All right. Yes. The joy that he held at Ne'ilah, well, the joy clearly is a result of the forgiveness. There's no question about that. In other words, we're forgiven, we're given communally, and we hope and we believe that we've been individually. But again, the joy, the pure joy of Yom Kippur, doesn't necessarily only come from forgiveness. The joy, and the Rav emphasizes this again and again, with the Lifnei Hashem aspect. You're in front of God. When you are in front of God, that is the very definition of joy. You feel rooted. As a matter of fact, what the Rav said, again, this is going to be a topic for Yom Kippur, is that self-disapproval, the self-criticism is not inconsistent with this joy. You feel rooted. You feel your Father is there. Your Father is with you. If your Father, for example, punishes you, it's more important that your Father is there. There's a joy in the fact that your Father is there. That's really the point. That's indeed the point. Hashem forgives, unlike nature, which is unforgiving. All right, are we ready for the last topic? If so, we will go on to the PowerPoint. Okay. Shalom, get ready. Let me maximize this. The fact that shofar has an inner message, that in fact the Rav's father perhaps, the Rav's father's approach to the Baal Tokea was perhaps a little harsh, can be gleaned specifically from Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Gimel, again, a very famous Rambam, Afal Tishif Kia Shofar B'Rosh Hashanah Gzeras HaKosuv Hu, even though the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is a biblical commandment, and therefore, according in the Brisker idea, biblical commandments by definition cannot have a ta'am, cannot have a reason that is comprehensible to man, Remez Yeshbo, there is an inner message in this. There is an inner message within the mitzvah. And it's an inner message that we have to absorb. Klomar, as if to say, Uru Yisheni Mishinasem, awaken sleepers from your sleep, Vinir Damim Hikitsu Vitardamasem. And slumberers, awaken from your slumber. What I'm going to do now is minimize this. Shalom, be ready. I'm going to minimize this, and Shalom, I'm going to ask you, first of all, can you hear me, or can you text me to say, are you ready to show the, or to play the audio? Okay. What I'm going to do is maximize, hold on, I have to minimize this, I don't have it, hold on 1 second, please. You can see my desktop, hold on, it's stopping, hold on 1 second, let's stop, stop 1 second. Okay, Shalom, on the count of four, what we're going to be doing is showing a, I'm taking a piece out of the 1975 Tshuva Drasha. The Tshuva Drasha was in Yiddish. You will hear the Yiddish, and you will see the subtitles, and hopefully you'll be able to follow. Shalom is controlling the audio, I am controlling the video, I'm going to count to four, and we're going to try to exactly synchronize the time that we press the start buttons. Okay, Shalom. One, two, three, four.
Mit einer Folge des Hörers zu reden. Was ist das? Sie rufen Kappen für Schloss. Und der Rambam hat verbunden, identifiziert Jüdisch zu werden, mit Sie rufen Kappen für Schloss. Unwachen für Schloss. Sie unwachen für Schloss. Der Hörer zu reden, das ist ein verwechtigter Mensch. Und wenn er weg genug, hat er Jüdisch zu reden. Nur wenn ihr schon mit einem Mann sein, wenn ihr dann ihm, nur wenn ihr nicht nachts sein, wenn ihr dann mit einem Mann sein. Was war die Ballade, mein Schild? Ich soll es auch noch mal sagen, ich soll es mal sagen, es ist sehr schwer mal sagen, ein Überleben müssen. Chavayot ist sehr schwer mal sagen. Es kann auch mal sagen, der abstrakte Begriff, das ist ein guter Rebbe von ihm. Es ist sehr schwer, es ist wieder gegen jenen, was man mit Buch allein. Ich habe es in drei Jahren. Es ist gegeben in Jahr Tavshil Chachas, Tavshil Chazayim, 1987, in Nissen. Und durch 20 Uhr Nacht von Schwiecher Pesach. Ich bin geschlafen in meinem Zimmer, upstairs, wenn es kommt mein Häuschen, den Hancock Road in Boston, in Brooklyn, wissen Sie mir. Es ist ein dritter Stock. Und geschlafen habe ich als Schlaf mit so, das war ruhig nicht. Als Schlaf, was erfrischt nicht. Als Schlaf, was ich fühle mit der Hölle ist. Und Pachat Balelis. Wie ist es gut, dass ich mich habe von dem Schloss? Als Stirling hat geblasen mit Kass und hat bis Reden hat er reingeringen in den Zimmer, in den Zimmer. Das heißt, er hat geblasen. Und ich hab auch abgesprungen vom Bett, halb wach, halb geschlafen wird. Ui, Tony ist mein Freund. Sie schläft doch unten in der Salon mit dem Parler. Und in ihr Zimmer sind die Fenster geblieben offen. Sie kann doch noch zucken und kriegen eine neue Karriere, das ist gefährlich. Und ich habe gesagt zu mir, halb wach geht, halb schlafen geht. Da habe ich herabgesprungen von der Treppe, reingeflogen in ihr Zimmer und verhakt die Fenster. Ich habe gesagt, 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 ich habe Zimmer leidig. Die Couch ist wieder leidig, fein zugedeckt, fein verbett, sie ist mit meinem Zimmer. Sie ist nicht darüber, aber keine Schwester, die sagen, ja. Das Tragischste und das Schrecklichste in der Überlebung ist gewendet die Plötzlichkeit, die Sorgen. Die friedliche Sekunde, die Luft nach oben trägt und verhärtet die Fenster, hat sich nur geducht und sich hat regelmäßig und gefunden im Zimmer ledig. Hat sich nur geducht, als ich mal gewähren in Haus. Noch mit etlichen Schor hab ich noch mit ihr gerät. Und mit vergeducht, als mit auch noch 10 Wege, das kleine Stimme durchbrach, als in der Rennung, 3-4-1, hat 10 Wege zu mir gesagt, zu mir, gute Nacht, und eine Reingehung zu sich im Zimmer. ihre gut verstanden. Nie, ich hab nicht verstanden. Komm aus der Zimmer, Ludwig. Komm aus dieser Puss. Ich hab mich herumgetreckt. Was hab ich mit dir geredet? Was hab ich mir verbracht? Was hat sich gesagt, gute Nacht? Wie ist es? Und ich hab mir gewollt, wir haben uns Schatten im Bett. Warum hat man sie überhaupt die Bathroom? Und nach unten haben wir gesagt, wenn wir uns nicht schießen, nach unten. Ah, und dieser Rose war nicht so angefühlt gut. Aber ich hab mir gesagt, und das meint hier nicht zu weh. Und das meint der Hufkappen von Schlaf. Nur wie ihr schön an mich lassen, denn ihr Dommel mit Tade Maske. Das erleben ist, dass jeder wird, durch machen, jetzt in der Rosh Hashanah. Der Rad der Schäfer. Das war mit Tocken Cheshbenes, das war mit Tocken Charotes, das war mit Tocken Kadolas, Rohabo, Viduyim, Zuerst, da reagiert der Mensch instinktiv, das ist ein Kiel Schäfer. Mit dem Wort, der Mensch ist allein, ausfallen, ausverschwinden, aber die Schöne mit ihm, der Schäfer ist gekommen. Sie hören auch bizarre Stimmen. Das Sturm von Schäfer nimmt er weg an die Lüge des Menschen.
The shofar is the, well, first of all, let me say that this was given in 1975 by the Tshuva Drasha, and as I was speaking to people who were at the Tshuva Drasha, they told me that the moment that the Rav said those, the critical words, my wife had actually died on months earlier, on Tinus Esther, there was this collective gasp, a gasp from the audience. And I'm hoping that when you heard this, if you had not seen the story before already printed, that you also had that gasp. It was this sudden, like the rug has been pulled out from under you. You can imagine how the rug felt. That, according to the rug, is the perfect analogy to hear her tshuva. There is no, it's awakening from sleep. That's the tragic realization that the false assumptions upon which we build our lives has come crashing before our eyes. We think everything is fine, we think that our relationship with God is fine, and all of a sudden we realize how grievously we have sinned. This is, by the way, the Rav made a point that this is Hirhur Tshuva, this is not Tshuva yet. It's interesting that in the Rosh Hashanah Matzer there is almost no reference to sin or forgiveness. In fact, many people leave out Avinu Malkeinu, Chatanu Lefanecha, the first of the Avinu Malkeinus. We do not yet mention sin. There is no sin mentioned in the Rosh Hashanah Matzer. In fact, one of the major themes of Rosh Hashanah is tshuva. How can there be tshuva without any explicit mention of sin or forgiveness in the Rosh Hashanah Matzer? Very little mention of sin or forgiveness in the Rosh Hashanah Matzer. And the reason is, according to the Rav, is because on Rosh Hashanah we were in this preliminary mode of Hirhur Tshuva. In Hirhur Tshuva we do not have the vocabulary, we don't have the fortitude. We're the sudden shock of what happened to us paralyzes us in terror. And that's what the next copy. Oh, wait, so why not go back to the normal setting? Okay, I have 3 minutes. I'll be finished very soon. Let me go back to normal setting. I'm going to go into the master really quickly. What I wanted to say here is that the first tiyut after Chazaras Hashatz is it's very, you know, the Chazan sings this. You're very easy to see a flashkiel. Every word ends with the concept, with the rhyming phrase chil. The word chil means terror and abject fear as a result of this Hirhur Tshuva. This is the reason that we blow 100 shofar blasts. The reason we blow 100 shofar blasts is because the mother of Sisera, the mother of this pagan general who was essentially a terrorist in the early days of the Israelites in the time of the Judges, who would regularly come down from the hills and kill and pillage and destroy, was in battle. And finally, Devorah and Barak defeated him. His mother, Sisera, was waiting at her window, according to Devorah's song, and she was crying, waiting for him. And the word that's used there is Yavava. Yavava being this sobbing, which is the Aramaic translation of the word Trua. According to Tosfos, in Rosh Hashanah, she wailed 100 times waiting for her barbaric son to arrive back from the battle. We also therefore blow 100 blasts on Rosh Hashanah, and the Velt asks, why does the Halacha derive the shofar blast on the one of the holiest days of the year from this disgusting person's mother? And the reason is because it's the shattering of illusions. The mother thought he was coming back, but in the deep recess of her heart, she realized that her son was never coming back again. It's the shattering of illusions. We must live the same experience on Rosh Hashanah. It results in pachad, a chil, a terror. This is how we start Rosh Hashanah, but over the Aseres Yemei Teshuva, culminating in Yom Kippur, we leave this stage of terror, this stage of chil, and we graduate into Yira, which is an awe, a reverence, an appreciation of God rather than an abject fear of God. That is then, therefore, the last and perhaps the most important message of the shofar, certainly in light of what we learned from the Rambam with regard to the statement, Uru Yesheni Mishinasen. That is essentially what I have to say. Are there any questions? Any more questions? It's now 10:01, I see on my calendar, on the clock. I'm sorry. Okay, we'll do that. Okay, can hopefully everything will be popping up soon. There we go. Okay, the screen share is off. Let me understand the question. Oh, definitely they contradict the words "father's word of the shofar blowing." That was in fact the message of the Mipnei Harav, that in fact the Rav disagreed with his father's approach to the shofar blower. I should mention that in as far as the Rav's father, I should mention that the Rav in Halachic Man gave a defense of his father in the fact that the Rav that saw this shofar blower, who's in fact a Chabad Chassid, didn't feel that his kavana was necessarily that of Hirur Tshuva. His kavana was more that of a person who felt that the shofar allows one to transcend one's essence, and therefore, again, you have to look at it, but it's a more mystical idea, allowing one self-transcendence, and in Halachic Man, one of the major topics is the importance of living in this world. I did turn off the screen here, right? Okay, so any other questions? Okay, if that's the case, everybody should have a wonderful Yontif, a meaningful Yontif, and I hope that we will get together again to discuss the Yom Kippur Matzah in exactly 2 weeks.
Thank you very much, Yisro Koach, and that I must say the video is, you know, fascinating, a new feature, and I want to thank you and Shalom for putting it together.
We have a more challenging, and
we'll see you, Dr. Lustiger, in 2 weeks, and we're on tomorrow afternoon, 12:30, Dr. Siegman, Wednesday night, I'm giving a shiur, and Thursday, Gideon Rothstein, Saturday night, Menachem Leibtag, Sunday, Pinchas Heyman, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, I want to wish everybody well, Yisro Koach, and thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We hope you found this recording a most enjoyable learning experience. We welcome your feedback. Please contact us at info@torahinmotion.org or at www.torahinmotion.org. Have a great day. Thank you.